Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you for the next 90 minutes as we discuss the world of sports on this 10th of March, 2012. As always, the call number is 347-215-6180. You can always follow me at twitter.com/WilliamGerald or hit me up at facebook.com/CyrilQuinn. Or go to my website and check out my new article on Wilt Chamberlain and LeBron James at CyrilGeraldQuinn.com. A lot to do, a lot of NFL. Certainly college basketball, March Madness is in full swing. And so we'll also continue our baseball preview. We'll do the NL Central before the show is out. But we begin in the nation's capital, where a new era will be dawning come late April, as the Washington Redskins have traded up, and they traded a handsome ransom to get one RG3. The Redskins, of course, trade up, and they give up three first-round picks and a second-round pick to the St. Louis Rams for the rights for the second pick, and unless something just crazy happens, the Redskins will be selecting RG3 with that pick. Listen, it's a move that the Redskins absolutely had to do moving forward. You couldn't go another year wondering. Scoffing through with a Grossman or John Beck or trying to there's nobody out there in free agency we have Peyton Manning, but again, Peyton Manning is going to be in high demand, to say the least. And there's a possibility that Redskins can still get a Peyton Manning. I mean, I know Peyton Manning visited Denver. Certainly, we'll do more on Peyton Manning as the show goes along. I know Peyton Manning visited Denver and also has a house in Miami, but the Redskins are certainly still one of the teams and one of the possible favorites that can land there, that can get Peyton Manning. But this, listen, if you don't get Peyton Manning, then so be it. This is all about giving a guy who many think can be a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback, a franchise caliber quarterback. Listen, he's not Andrew Luck. Okay, I mean, anybody says that they would have taken him over Andrew Luck, possibly that number one pick, it's just crazy. I mean, you don't pass up Andrew Luck. But this guy definitely has the makings of somebody who is a pass first, run second quarterback, and who just happens to run a 4-4-3 as a quarterback. But make no mistake about it, as in comparison to Michael Vick, as in comparison to say a Vince Young, he is a pass first quarterback. I mean, there's no question, there's no two ways about it. This guy is as dynamic as there is coming out in the last couple of years in terms of quarterback prospects. You know, there's no character issues with him. He says all the right things, knows how to carry himself, knows how to handle himself. And, you know, the Redskins, for a long time, have been looking and searching for a face of the franchise. Now they have it. Now it won't be Mike Shanahan that is the face of the franchise. You have Reginald Griffin, you have a guy, again, you have a guy that, you know, you had to make this move. You have a guy who's going to lead your franchise moving into the future. And, you know, I understand it's a lot to give up. 3 first-round picks, second-round pick. Well, you know what? If the guy turns out to be a Pro Bowl, if he turns out to be a franchise quarterback, nobody will care about those picks. I mean, right now, you know, Jay Cutler, you look at the 2 years Jay Cutler has been in Chicago Bear, they have been championship caliber. The first year, they make it to the NFC Championship. This year, they were a Super Bowl caliber team before he got hurt. Is anybody talking about those draft picks that they gave up to get him a couple years ago? No. Back in 2009, no. Nobody's talking about that. So it's a risky move, but again, a move that the Redskins absolutely had to make. Mike Shanahan does not have that much time to get this thing right. A quarterback of his magnitude, you know, I think Cam Newton helped make this possible because, let's be honest, had Cam Newton came in last year and just had a bad year or sat the bench, the hype on Reginald Griffin III would not be as high, and he would not be as highly rated as he is right now. I mean, that I think the Cam Newton coming in as a rookie, and also, you know, Andy Dalton, and, you know, we've seen more and more over the past 4 or 5 years, rookie quarterbacks coming in right away and playing. I mean, you saw Flacco and Sanchez and Matt Ryan. You see more and more. I mean, no longer guys are sitting 2 or 3 years. It's like, if the guy can play, he's coming right. He's coming in right away. Now, listen, if the Redskins can't land Peyton Manning, then there is no question that RG3 will be the starting quarterback of the Washington Redskins. There's no getting around it. Again, but that's if the Redskins can't land Peyton Manning. Do not dismiss Peyton Manning. Do not dismiss the Redskins for possibly landing Peyton Manning. They're about $45 million under the salary cap. They have plenty of money to spend. Free agency, of course, is going to start March 15th, ironically, with the NBA trade deadline, which is, you know, it's funny how that works out. But Redskins are going to go out there and get free agents, get weapons on, you know, in terms of wide receivers, maybe, you know, add to the offensive line, get a little younger on defense. So they're going to make some free agent moves. I understand what the Redskins were trying to do. I don't quite get Cleveland. Cleveland is in the same boat as the Redskins in terms of not having a quarterback prior to this. Cleveland had 2 first-round picks, okay, this year. They had 2 first-round picks. How they allow the Redskins to just come in and get this done right now is amazing to me. You had more to give up than the Redskins. I mean, you could have gave up your 2 first-round picks for this year. You could have gave up in a first 2012, 2013, or first 2014. I mean, they could have offered 2 through 4 first-round picks for RG3 if they really wanted them, if they wanted to get them. I don't quite get what Cleveland was doing. Maybe they're not as high on RG3. The Redskins can't give the Redskins credit for coming in and not wasting any time and not letting this thing get to April or whatever, get close to the draft. Redskins came right in, aggressive, made the move. Again, I don't know what Mike Holmgren was thinking. If you're the Cleveland Browns, and you have 2 first-round picks to offer in one season, and you don't make a stronger push to get RG3, I just don't understand what their logic was, to be honest with you. I would certainly like to hear from somebody in the Cleveland brass on what happened. If I'm a Cleveland fan, I'm not happy whatsoever. I'm thinking, who's your starting quarterback this year? Just getting started here on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. A busy edition, a lot to do in terms of college basketball. When we return, we'll have some Saturday morning headlines, still have some NBA, Major League Baseball. 9 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour, we'll be right back. Welcome back to this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Cyril Quinn, taking you to 11:30 as we discuss the world of sports. Of course, with the college basketball last night, a couple minor upsets, well, one big upset, Cincinnati taking out Syracuse, and you had Cincinnati taking out Syracuse, and you had Baylor taking out Kansas. Nothing to shake things up. Syracuse is going to be a number one seed. Cincinnati was already in the tournament as well, so it's not like they were going to steal a bid. Had they beaten, if they beat Louisville tonight in the Big East Championship, you see that a lot with these teams, especially guys, teams that are going to be number one seeds, you know, lose early in these conference championships. It's not a big deal as far as I'm concerned. As long as you're healthy going in. You know, I've seen North Carolina lose twice in their conference semifinals and then win national championships in recent years. So I don't put too much into the Syracuse loss. Cincinnati was hot from three point land. You know, same conference, know each other very well. Again, you almost sometimes rather lose early, get your rest and come back probably, next Thursday or Friday, ready for the NCAA tournament. You still have two number one seeds up for grabs as far as I'm concerned. Again, Kentucky, Syracuse, regardless of what happens in these tournaments, conference tournaments are going to be number ones. And I would say the other number ones. Now, if Missouri loses in this Big 12 championship, I don't know who, I'm trying to figure out who's going to be that fourth number one. The third number one's coming out the ACC. You know, it's going to be North Carolina or Duke, depending on which one of those teams wins the conference championship. And if somehow neither one of those teams wins their conference championships, it'll be North Carolina based on what they did, based on winning the regular season title again and beating Duke in that last game. But I don't know, That fourth number one, Missouri plays Baylor. Yeah, Michigan State is still, is in their conference semifinals. So there's still a lot to be determined with that fourth number one. That fourth number one is definitely up for grabs. Like I said, Michigan State still has an outside chance. Even Ohio State, don't put them out of the mix as far as having a chance for that fourth number one seed. Big East not as strong going to the tournament as it was last year. They'll have a ton of teams, but I'm looking at this Big East championship. I'm seeing Louisville and Cincinnati. Neither one of those teams are going to do any damage in the NCAA tournament, as far as I'm concerned. I just don't see it with the Big East this particular year as being a major factor in the NCAA tournament. Certainly Syracuse has a legit chance to win a national championship. Other than that, I don't see any Big East team doing any considerable damage in the NCAA tournament, but we'll see what happens with that. Again, most of these conference tournaments, especially the major ones, you have conference finals and semifinals of teams who are going to be in the tournament. Not to mention, this has not been a year of bid stealers where you have teams, who are going to be in the tournament get knocked out early of the conference tournament. You have teams who absolutely didn't have a chance to be in, still a bid. That has not been a year for that. I don't think that this year, when they do the selection, the whole selection process, I don't think it's going to be that difficult, to be honest with you. I think now it's just a matter of seeding and finding out, basically who are going to be, it's always tricky at the end as far as the last four teams in, last couple. 64 to 68, those type teams. But I don't see much controversy this year in the NCAA tournament selection process. So we'll see what happens with that. Of course, this is a big Saturday of conference championships, of games. We have the ACC semis, Big East championship, Big 12 championship. Again, nice, good win for Baylor last night against Kansas. Kansas had handled Baylor twice this season. Not easy beating Kansas down there at the Big 12 championship. They had just owned everybody for the past decade. They have owned that tournament So that was a big win for Baylor. It certainly helped improve their seeding. Maybe if they win they can move up to at least a number. Maybe they have an outside chance at number two. Certainly, they could be a. Certainly, they would lock down a number three. Seed if they were to win this tournament. They'll be no lower than the four. Probably they'll be no lower than the four seed in the tournament. So we'll see what happens with that. 347-215-6180 is your call number. The Saturday morning series, the Saturday morning wake up call. When we return, we will have some Saturday morning headlines. We'll be right back. After the 10 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday morning wake up call, Saturday morning headlines. Indianapolis is having the definition of a fire sale. They release Joseph Addai, Melvin Bullitt, and Dallas Clark. They've already decided not to resign. Of course, Jeff Saturday, Reggie Wayne. And they're trying to, and Curtis Painter, which if I'm Curtis Painter, I'm thinking, what did I do? Like, I barely got on the field. I played a little bit this year, so I guess when changes were going to come, Jim Irsay wasn't kidding around with the changes. I mean, this is not going to be the Indianapolis that we know it. They've gone a new era, certainly, in the Colt franchise, and I can't knock them for releasing any of these players, to be honest with you. I mean, if you're going to rebuild, just go all the way. Now, again, and we've discussed this many a times on this program, is the guy who's calling the shots that concerns me. The fact that it's Irsay, the one calling the shots. If you are an Indianapolis fan, that would obviously have to concern you in terms of, you know, like you think to yourself, like, what is the future? You know, they're going to draft Andrew Luck, of course, but you still have to be nervous about the direction of the franchise with Irsay taking just complete control of the franchise. But again, on the surface, they're doing it the right way. I mean, you cut Peyton Manning, which was the right move. You get rid of all these older, high-salary players. And even with Dwight Freeney, I say if you can win with Dwight Freeney, if you can lose with him, you can lose without him. I mean, if he's not going to – now, Dwight Freeney, to me, is still one of the premier pass rushers in the league. But, you know, if he's not going to restructure his contract, you do need to make $19 million next year. You know, you got to do what you have to do. So I cannot knock Indianapolis at all for making that particular move. Again, the question for Indianapolis is, you know, are you confident as an Indianapolis fan on who is pulling the trigger in terms of Jim Irsay? And again, I myself, I would not be confident at all. and Jim Irsay pulling the trigger. But, you know, so far, so good. Some of these players can still play. I mean, when you look at it, like, when you look at, I think, you know, Gary Brackett, you know, Dallas Clark still has a little bit of gas out there in the tank, but I can certainly understand what Indianapolis is doing as far as this new movement and just turn the future over to basically it's going to be Andrew Luck's team. It's going to be the Andrew Luck show come, you know, come April when they draft him as the number one pick. The Jets signed Mark Sanchez to a 3-year, $40.5 million extension. I don't understand this. If I'm a Jet fan, I hope when a Jet fan saw this morning, they, you know, wasn't eating anything. Because I don't know what Mark Sanchez has done to warrant that type of extension. The way he's going to make it $13 million a year to warrant any extension. I don't get it. You know, they have been, you know, there's been some talk with them being a Peyton Manning, you know, taking a look at Peyton Manning. Not that they were going to be ever, not that they were leading candidates, but just, you know, I'm sure they were going to give him a look. I don't get it. I don't get it. Maybe Sperano feels like he can fix Sanchez. Is your call number. When we return, we will talk to some NBA. We'll get to some NBA. I'll give you three teams that absolutely need to make a trade. We'll talk about that and much, much more in this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call. We'll be right back. As many as you first may have thought it was going to be, but Listen, I'll give you three teams that absolutely that need to make a move. Number one, the Chicago Bulls. Now, the reason why I had them number one, you say, you know, they got the best record in basketball. Yes, they do. That they are very close to a championship. The Bulls need another scorer, and particularly at the two guard. The Rip Hamilton situation has not worked out. Rip Hamilton has been beat up. And again, the guy's 35, 30, you know, 36, 37 years old. You know, at this point in his career, I don't know how much gas is left in the tank. But even if he gets healthy, he's not the second. He's not a legit. He's not the scorer. He's not going to be able to get enough out of him. You're not going to be able to get enough out of him that could put you over the top, and put you over the top in the final to get to the finals, or to win a championship. Even if you do get to the finals, they need to go out there and make a big play for Ray Allen. I mean, I know OJ Mayo can be gotten. I wouldn't trust OJ Mayo. OJ Mayo has never been a part of anything that was in terms of winning. I know Memphis made the playoffs last year, but you know, Ray Allen is a perfect fit for what the Bulls are trying to do, giving them a legit guy who can get you anywhere from 15 to 20 on a given night. He can, you know, he's a veteran. He hits big shots. He understands Thibodeau's system on both ends of the court. He's a locker room guy. It would be a perfect fit to go out there and get Ray Allen and get Ray Allen. You can get Ray Allen right now. You know, the Bulls would not have to give up a lot. They have enough depth to where they give up a young player here or there and move and get Ray Allen. It would not take a lot to get him. The Bulls cannot, I don't think, can stand pat and expect to win a championship. I really don't. I think this is a year where, you know, if you're the Bulls, you know, there's no dominant team. I mean, there's no dominant team, not Miami, not Oklahoma City. San Antonio. There's nobody that scares you in the NBA right now, as far as I'm concerned. You know, Miami's the most talented, but yeah, you can't trust them in a big spot until they prove it, go out there and prove it. You can't. I don't trust them. Second team I would say would be the Lakers. Lakers need a lot. I mean, let's be honest. I mean, they need, you know, with the point guard situation, they need depth, three-point shooting. And, you know, they have a guy, an all-star caliber player, Paul Gasol, that can, if you can't get a Deron Williams, you can flip Gasol into two or three pieces. Namely, you know, Houston, we all know how badly Houston wants Gasol. You can flip him into a Kyle Lowry or a Luis Scola and try to go from there. I mean, but the Lakers are going to have to make a move, whether it be, you know, moving Gasol or whether it be using that trade exception they have and adding some depth to their bench. Because right now, not getting close anything out of their bench. And frankly, you know, you have Kobe Bryant just, you know, playing so many minutes. I mean, you want to know why Kobe Bryant's shot probably like 40% in February. Those minutes that he played December, January, where he was looking fresh, where he looked great, you know, starting to catch up with him. I mean, that's all the guy, you know, 33 years old, guy's played almost 50,000 minutes in his career if you combine the playoffs. At some point, he was going to start to wear down a bit. Mike Brown has to cut his minutes somewhat and have him fresh for the playoffs. And you can't have that when you don't have a bench. You don't have nobody that can come in and give him an extra four or five minutes a game, you know, in terms of a break. So Lakers need point guard and bench help. And, you know, Gasol is that, listen, there's been a lot of talk about Gasol. He is definitely a guy that you can move and get a number and numerous amount of pieces for. Gasol still holds value in this league. 31, not old. He's a skilled big man. He's just still as skilled as he is in terms of a big man. And if the Lakers stand pat, they could be a first-round, a one-and-done team easily. Lakers make the right move, they could be right there in terms of competing to get back to the finals. That is the fine line. That's where the Lakers are at right now. This team currently constructed will not go any further than the first, second round. Definitely not past. if they do get if they with the right matchup, they do get to the second round, definitely not past the second round. So, Lakers starting to get exposed, even though despite that they despite their win yesterday against Minnesota, you know, started to get a little exposed this past week, losing to the likes of the Pistons and the Wizards, and then there's some other issues along with that as well. Losing the Pistons and Wizards, for what they are, but you know, we'll see what happens with that. But I would expect that the Lakers make some type of move, even if it's not a blockbuster move. The Clippers, obviously, quietly, the Clippers have been struggling since Chauncey Billups got hurt. When Billups first got hurt, we said, it's a big deal, but it's not. It won't count to the playoffs, leadership, things of that nature. They've been barely a 500 teams by a 500 basketball team since Billups got hurt. Bledsoe not been doing the job, struggling at that two-guard position. The Clippers need to make a move and also get a legit two-guard. Listen, it wouldn't be the worst thing for the Clippers to go after Ray Allen. I mean, can you imagine Ray Allen? You know how many open shots Ray Allen would get with double teams of Chris Paul and Blake Griffin? Or how many open transitional threes would he get with the Clippers always running, always on the attack in terms of fast breaking? Again, a perfect fit for Ray Allen. I don't know, he does have a child who is six, so maybe that, I don't know if, like, Los Angeles, I don't know how, from the standpoint of, does he want to move all the way out to Los Angeles? So, you always have to take those things into account. But as far as it being a fit for what they're trying to do and for the personnel, I can't think of a better fit at the two-guard position. A veteran guy, won a championship, he would command immediate respect in that locker room. He's not a guy who's going to ruffle any feathers. Again, a clutch shooter. Ray Allen is a guy who has made a number of big shots in playoff competition. So you want those guys on your team come April and May, certainly to go out there and help you compete for a championship. So those are three teams that I think absolutely, if they want to advance and if they want to win a championship or get to a level to where they can compete for a championship, need to make moves. As far as Friday night action, you had the Clippers getting a big win over the Spurs, 120-108. First time basically in over a decade, maybe even longer than a decade, that the Clippers have won in San Antonio. At least I think it had been 17 straight times games they had lost to San Antonio. So they get a big win. No Tony Parker in that game. I think Popovich is really starting to rest some of his players a bit. They said Parker had a thigh contusion. I don't think it was something that he couldn't play with. That he couldn't play with the playoff start today, put to you that way. So, we saw him sit Parker and Duncan again, a game against Portland that snapped the 11-game winning streak. So, listen, Popovich knows what he's doing. He knows he has an older team, and you got to keep these guys fresh, especially in this condensed season. But regardless of that, big win for the Clippers, 69 points out of Mo Williams and Chris Paul. Chris Paul had 36. Mo Williams, of course, was 7-9 from 3-point range. Lakers get a much needed win after two horrible losses to the Pistons and Wizards. Much needed win at Minnesota, 105-102. Kevin Love had to leave this game with a minor injury. I don't think it's something major, but he had to leave this game. And then at the end of the game, Ricky Rubio collides with Kobe Bryant. Hurts his knee. I don't know how serious that is, but he had to be carried out at the end of the game. So that's certainly – Minnesota has been playing great this year, has been playing great basketball this year, and certainly you would hate to see, those two guys. Those are probably the most two guys they can afford to lose right now. Rubio's played well his first year coming over from Spain. And, of course, Kevin Love is – probably the best power forward in basketball right now. Has certainly had a great season as well. Quietly, Derek Williams, the rookie. I know Kyrie Irving has been the talk of the league as far as rookies goes, but Derek Williams quietly has had, over the last 15, 20 games, he's played tremendous basketball. So keep your eyes on him as being a guy who maybe has some all-star potential down the road. And the Knicks lose their fourth straight, 119-114 to the Milwaukee Bucks. The Knicks, again, obviously missing, with Chandler being nicked up, certainly he's not helping. The defense has suffered tremendously. And the Knicks just aren't playing good basketball. I mean, they're 18-22. They have a losing record since Carmelo Anthony came back. They are setting up to be coached by Phil Jackson next year. There's no two ways about it. Mike D'Antoni, I think D'Antoni's out anyway. Unless this team gets to the Eastern Conference Finals, I don't see them bringing back D'Antoni for next year. This team is just something missing with this team. We know it's not the talent, and we knew, and still, we understand that it was going to take a while for them to gel with all the new pieces that they have. Jeremy Lin has not, Lin Sandy has died down, but it's not like he's playing terrible basketball. It's just that the team is not winning. And, when you're not winning, it's not too much hype going on when you're losing games. 20 points, 8 assists doesn't look as good in a loss as certainly as it does a win. So Knicks struggling right now. We'll see if they can bounce back as they are in the midst of a brutal schedule moving forward. When we return, we'll talk some Peyton Manning. We'll talk the Peyton Manning era in Indianapolis, and we still have our baseball preview. That's all coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call.
Cult for almost all of my adult life, but I guess in life and in sports, we all know that nothing lasts forever. Always enjoy having played for such a great team. I will leave the Colts with nothing but good thoughts and gratitude, and I've truly been blessed. I've been blessed to play here. I've been blessed to be in the NFL. And as I go, I go with just a few words left to say. A few words I want to address to Colts fans everywhere. Thank you very much from the bottom of my heart. I truly have enjoyed being your quarterback.
That is, of course, the now former Indianapolis Colt quarterback, Peyton Manning. In a press conference on Wednesday, talking about, of course, his departure from the Colts. It was a move that was evident months ago what had to be done, in terms of his injury, being owed the $28 million by March 8th. The thing about this, and I never thought, first of all, in the NFL, we've seen all-time great quarterbacks end up somewhere else. Sometimes it normally happens like that in the NFL. You know, I think of two to come to mind, Johnny Unitas and Joe Montana, two of the top five of all time without question, end up in different uniforms to end their story careers. But I never thought that Peyton Manning would be that guy. I really thought that Peyton Manning would end up in an Indianapolis Colt uniform. You know, this neck injury, the only reason that this happens is because of the neck injury. I mean, if Peyton Manning's healthy, I don't think they cut him. I think the neck injury, you know, gave them the perfect excuse to be like, listen, you know, it's time to move forward. I mean, it was like a perfect storm of stuff. It was the neck injury and getting the number one pick where they could put themselves in a position of having Andrew Luck. I mean, what if Andrew Luck decided to come out last year? Or what if Andrew Luck would decide to stay another season and come out and wait until 2013? I mean, a lot of things had to happen for this to occur. And they all happened all at once. I mean, you had Manning getting injured, you had other Colts getting injured, you had them being just atrocious and getting that number one pick. And again, you think about football before he got to Indianapolis into the state of Indiana. Listen, I'm very familiar with Indiana, and it was a basketball hotbed, as we all know. It was a Hoosier State. You know, but Peyton Manning put Indiana on the map from a football standpoint. I mean, that stadium they had, that new Lucas Oil Field, would not be there without Peyton Manning. Again, as impact, you know, he's as important to that franchise as any one player has ever been as important to their particular franchise. Maybe outside of, say, John Elway with Denver. But he meant that much to that particular franchise because, you know, they, again, before Peyton Manning, I mean, the Colts were, you know, that the Colts, you're talking about Jim Harbaugh's and you're talking about Jack Trudeau's. I mean, the Colts were a joke in Indianapolis. They were an absolute joke. I mean, Ron Meyer coaching the team. At one point, I mean, you had Jim Harbaugh and called Jim Harbaugh after the Chicago Bears. And Harbaugh got to the AFC Championship, so maybe I shouldn't knock him. But look at that franchise before Peyton Manning, and look at that franchise during the Peyton Manning years when they were perennial Super Bowl contenders. You know, a bad year for them was 10-6. You're going six straight years and winning 12 games, all division titles. I mean, this one guy changed the course of that franchise. And listen, this is what, you know, they got their money's worth as far as a draft pick. They get the number one draft pick. They take him instead of course, Ryan Leaf. And you get, you know, you get a Super Bowl. You get a guy who, you know, will go down as one of the great all-time greats in the history of the sport. That is, you know, they got their value pick. I mean, more than a franchise quarterback, a guy who is an all-time great. Now the question moving forward is, how much does Peyton Manning have in the tank? You know, I think he is worth the risk, just considering that you would have to give up nothing to get him. My whole contention was, there was no way in the world that I would trade draft picks for a guy who could be one hit away from his career being over. So I totally changed my outlook on the Peyton Manning situation. I'm not going to knock a team. Whether that be Miami, whether it be, you know, Washington, Denver, I'm not going to knock a team if they go after Peyton Manning and if they take a risk on getting Peyton Manning. I'm not. Apparently, now again, we don't know how well he's throwing. Apparently, he's throwing, you know, apparently the neck is fine. Okay. The neck is fine, but apparently still, you know, the nerves in his arm is still trying to strengthen. And, you know, again, you don't know. I mean, it obviously is a risk, but apparently he's throwing better than he once was. The fact that he's throwing speaks volumes of where he's at compared to where he was at, say, a couple months ago. So this guy is one of the most competitive players in the league. He's a guy who's going to, you know, he's going to play football in 2012. He's going to play football in 2012. I personally think the best destination for him to go would be Arizona. I really like Arizona as a destination for him to go. I think that team is ready-made. I think that team, they have obviously having Larry Fitzgerald, having young players, some young talent around him as far as, you know, they have some young players on defense, Patrick Peterson. Beanie Wells had a very good year. I think Arizona would be a great destination for him. The Denver thing, again, Denver is underratedly good. I can see it. I can see Denver, too. As far as, you know, they have a very good offensive line, great running game. You can go out, Demaryius Thomas is a very good player. You can go out and get another receiver or a tight end. So Denver has some money to spend on some pieces. I think the Redskins thing is still up in the air, but I'm not as confident as I once was, especially with this new, with RG3 now coming to town. As they just said, Peyton Manning is expected to visit Arizona and Miami. And of course, the Redskins now in Kansas City. Kansas City has shown some interest in them. That would be a very interesting mix with Dwayne Bowe, and they have some decent young, Dwayne Bowe, and they got the tight end Baldwin, which is very good. Jamal Charles back. So, you know, again, he is worth the risk, though. Like, there was a point that I didn't think that you should touch him, that I wouldn't even look about touching him. But right now, I believe he is worth the risk if you want to go out there. And basically, listen, you're going to pay him some money. It'll be an insane. You're going to give him a lot of guaranteed money. It's not, you're not going to hit Peyton Manning with one of those incentive-laden contracts. That's not – Tom Condon is not going to have that. Condon, who's Manning's agent is not – you know, that's not going to work because he's too much in demand for that. Like, they were at least, 12 teams that had some type of interest in Peyton Manning. So he's going to get a lot of money. He's going to break the bank somewhere. And certainly somebody is going to overpay to get him. But he will be playing football in 2012. It goes without saying. 48 minutes after the 10 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. When we return, I will look at the NL Central. Who is the team to beat? Can the Cardinals do it again? Can Cincinnati rebound? Will Pittsburgh ever make the playoffs again? Those are some of the questions we'll answer coming up on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. After the 10 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, 347-215-6180 is your call number. I'm also for my Blog Talk Radio audience on the chat line. Got that going after struggling with that early this morning. So that is back up, so you can hit me off with any comments or questions that you may have. Saturday Morning Wake Up Call poll question of the day is, would you sign Peyton Manning? I know I didn't post it on I didn't post it on the Blog Talk Radio chat line. I did post it on Facebook earlier this week, but that is a Saturday morning wake up call poll question of the morning. Would you sign Peyton Manning to your team? Well, look at the NL Central here as we continue our baseball preview. Season, of course, opens April 5th. Not that, less than a month. Spring training is obviously has gotten underway. Certainly hard to get a read on spring training in terms of how good your team's going to be. A lot of young players are playing. A lot of, teams are trying to find out about guys coming off injuries and things of that nature. Look at this division. A lot of people love Cincinnati, are in love with Cincinnati, and have already called them the team to beat. I've still, despite the losses, despite losing Prince Fielder, I still like Milwaukee in this division. Milwaukee, remember, they're going to get Ryan Braun. They're going to have Ryan Braun for the whole season. Of course, he had his 50-game suspension rescinded. That lineup is still very good with Braun, Weeks, Corey Hart, who will be back certainly, who might not start off the season, but will be back early, no later than mid-April. Nigel Morgan. They add Aramis Ramirez. I know he's 34 years old, but he still can got a guy that can get you 25 to 30 home runs and get you 90 to 100 RBIs. But the key to me with them is the rotation. I mean, Gallardo, they had the best rotation in the division. I don't think there's any question. Gallardo and Greinke and Sean Markham, even Randy Wolf, is a good enough fourth starter on a playoff caliber team. And their bullpen is lights out in the eighth and ninth innings, or seventh through ninth innings, where you can go K-Rod and Axford. I mean, they are very, again, Milwaukee's going to be good. I mean, again, Prince Fielder, it's hard to replace that type of production, but not, you don't have to have one guy replace that kind of production. A couple guys have better years here and there, and you can make up for that production. But again, the most important thing is the pitching. And that team has the best pitching in the division. I don't think there's any two ways about it. And I see them as my team to beat in that particular division. Next in line, I would say, would be the Cincinnati Reds. The Reds have a lot of good offensive talent. When you talk about Joey Votto, Jay Bruce, Brandon Phillips, I question it, but they have still some major question marks in their lineup. First of all, you start two rookies, Zach Cozart and Devin Mesoraco. As I butcher his name, at catcher. And you're starting them at two defensive positions, catcher, shortstop, and catcher. Scott Rowland is not getting any younger. And so that lineup can have three major question marks in that lineup. I mean, is Jay Bruce going to have another year like he had last year? You expect Votto to be great. Phillips, you expect him to play well. But certainly some question lineups anytime you start or a rookie, let alone starting two in your lineup, you don't know how that's going to go. That's going to go with your offense, and they're going to have to score some runs because the rotation, frankly, is okay, not great. I mean, Cuadro had a big year. They pick up Latos, which is he's a good number two. After that, you have a lot of question marks in that 3, 4, 5 with Arroyo, Mike Leake, and of course. And Homer Bailey. So I think they're Cincinnati's offense is going to have to be big time this year because I'm not in love with the pitching. I'm not. Now they're going to try to make Aroldis Chapman a starter. Aroldis Chapman, the guy who could throw about 130 miles an hour. You're going to try to stretch them out to a starter. Last time I remember a team doing this, and maybe another team did it, certainly you can help me out, was Jobo Chamberlain. It did not work out well. Now, maybe this dude is more mentally stronger than Jobo Chamberlain was. Chamberlain should have stayed in the bullpen. He would have been dominant had they kept him in a bullpen and not tried to make him a starter. But Aroldis Chapman, again, I don't know. I mean, that is, you know, going from starter to bullpen, going from bullpen to starter is a different world, as far as I'm concerned. It's an absolute different world. And, again, I don't know the guy. I see him as a guy who just wants to throw a million miles an hour and blow everybody away. I haven't seen him develop as just a pitcher as of yet. So we'll see what happens with that. Certainly, we'll see what happens with that. Now, if Chapman comes in and goes out there and wins 13 to 15 games, that could possibly put them, you know, in a position to where they can compete, certainly with the likes of with Milwaukee or anybody in the league, because, you know, I believe that offense is going to score enough runs. It's just a matter of getting that third quality starter to try to kind of balance your rotation out. I like their bullpen with Mattson. I thought that was a very good pickup. They also get Sean Marshall. So, and then they still have Nick Massett as well. So I don't have a major problem with their bullpen. I would think that, you know, they would have thought ahead and had a third starter in place and kept Chapman in the bullpen to make their bullpen dominant. Because you put Chapman along with the guys they just picked up, that is one of the better bullpens in the division, let alone in the National League, let alone the division. But I still like Cincinnati to finish second. The wild card in this division would be, to me, the St. Louis. St. Louis still, despite losing Albert Pujols, has one of the best offenses in the National League. When you talk about David Freese, Matt Holliday, John Jay, Alan Craig is a budding star. I know he's injured right now, but he's going to be a budding star. You still have Berkman. You still have Yadier Molina. That lineup, they will score some runs. The only question marks I have about them, and they have a very good bullpen. Questions I would have about them obviously stem from the starting pitching. Carpenter, his age, again, he was great in the postseason, but again, he's not getting any younger. Wainwright, how healthy is he coming off the elbow surgery? And after that, you got, you know, Kyle Loesch, Westbrook, Jaime Garcia. So, again, I understand, you know, not too many teams are going to have pitching staffs as deep and as talented as the Philadelphia Phillies or San Francisco Giants. But I really think you have to have three quality starters at the top of your rotation. You know, once you get past, if you get past your second starter and there's question marks beyond your second starter, then there's a chance that your pitching staff might have a long year. And right now, I trust two St. Louis starting pitchers in Carpenter and even Wainwright. Now, I'm not even sure Wainwright, you know, coming back. Coming back off his injury would be the Adam Wainwright that we saw in 2010. So to me, St. Louis is going to have to score a ton of runs. They're going to score a ton of runs to kind of offset some of those pitching deficiencies, especially in the starting staff that they have. A team that's up and coming, Pittsburgh Pirates. Pittsburgh, again, doesn't have one pitcher that you completely trust. To me, when you look at their starting rotation with Carstens, Bedard, McDonald, you know, Charlie Morton, A.J. Burnett, Morton Burnett will start the season on the disabled list. And Charlie Morton could miss a start. Probably won't start the season on the disabled list, but have a minor injury as well. I mean, listen, Pittsburgh is a fun story. I'm glad to see that they signed Andrew McCutchen, one of the better younger players in baseball, to an extension to show that they were committed to keeping their young talent. They're working on something with Neil Walker, who's their other young talent, young star player. Pittsburgh just has nobody that scares you. And that lineup, as I saw, McCutchen is not that. It's not deep. The Pittsburgh staff, again, is a bunch of number threes and fours. Pittsburgh is okay. I see them as, you know, 75-win team. I don't think they're a 500 team, but, you know, they can win 75 games. But I don't see Pittsburgh taking this jump up to where they can challenge, unless they make a bunch of moves. And then, you know, in terms of how they spend their money, they're not taking on any additional salary. I don't see Pittsburgh as a major player. I just don't. So we'll see what happens with that. Remember, last year they were in first place on July 15th before the wheels fell off. Before the wheels fell off at 48-43, and we have the Cubs who will be in the basement. The Cubs are in complete rebuilding mode. You have, you know, Soriano still playing after all these years. This is the problem with the Cubs. And again, Theo Epstein has, you know, plenty of time to try to get this thing turned around. He obviously inherits a mess, to say the least. I find their best player is Starlin Castro, who's about their 21-year-old shortstop. He's going to be a star. It's a matter of him developing offensively that much more. He was an all-star last year, hit over 300. He's going to be a big-time player. But they don't have one guy in that lineup that scares you, game in and game out. Yeah, Soriano can you know, hit a couple of home runs in one game and then go about a month without getting on base. But when you talk about Alfonso Soriano as being your best power hitter, that's a problem. That speaks to your offense. And forget about the pitching staff. I mean, you talk about a pitching staff that, you know, Matt Garza, to me, when he was at his best, could have been ended up being a number two, but he looks more and more like a number three. Ryan Dempster, if you wasn't a fan of Chicago Cubs, you might not know that he's even still pitching. I mean, Pat Mahomes, Randy Wells, Travis Wells, you have guys, that staff is just, you know, that staff, forget about the lineup not scaring anybody. That pitching staff does not scare anybody. But it is a complete rebuilding job, rebuilding for the Cubs. I mean, Theo Epstein is going to rebuild. It's going to rebuild that team through, you know, with draft picks and developing, you know, their farm system. And it's going to take a couple years. I mean, I don't blame them for not going crazy in free agency. I don't blame them for not signing Albert Pujols. Yeah, Pujols can go over there and hit 40 home runs on a team that wins about 70 games. So that I don't blame them at all for this process. I mean, you gotta tear it. It's only gonna get worse before it gets better. You have to tear it apart before indeed it does get better. So I have Milwaukee winning the division. Cincinnati in second place. When we compete for a wild card, have St. Louis in third, but they could, depending on things break right, they could win the division again easily. Pittsburgh up and coming, but still not quite there. And, of course, the Cubs, who are just the Cubs. I mean, that's the Cubs are the Cubs. I mean, that's all. I can't add anything to that. They'll just be the lovable losers that they have been for the better part of since, you know, 1908. 4 minutes after 11 o'clock, after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call. When we return, we'll have some React quotes of the week. We'll be right back. 6 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wickham Call, as we take you to 11:30 on this 10th of March, right in NCAA tournament, March Madness in full swing with all the conference tournaments, selection show tomorrow. We will have a special either on Monday or Tuesday in regards to the selection show, breaking down the brackets and giving you certainly Final Four picks, championship picks as well. You know, we'll certainly talk about that, have some fun with that, you know, Monday or Tuesday. You have, again, all the conference tournaments. Some of them will be done today. Some of them will be done tomorrow. Big East, again, to show you that it's not as strong. You have no Syracuse, no Connecticut, no Georgetown in a Big East championship this year. So the Big East just is not quite where it was, or it has been over the past couple of years. But, you know, these things run in cycles. You know, that's college basketball in a nutshell in this day and time. So here we go with React quotes. This will never happen again, from Sean Payton and Mickey Lewis, talking about the bounties that were put out, the bounty pot that was put out, a program that was run by their then defensive coordinator, Greg Williams. Williams, who ran it, you know, basically for 3 years that he was there, you know, even after the investigation that they had, that started basically in 2009 with the whole NFC championship game where Brett Favre just got lit up. I don't understand how a head coach cannot know or do something about this. I really don't. You know, Sean Payton is the ultimate micromanager. I don't see how he kept letting this thing go along. I just don't understand it. And please, if another state comes out and says they don't know, they didn't know about it, Drew Brees comes out and says he wasn't aware. Drew, you're on the team. I mean, I understand that things are compartmentalized as far as meetings and things of that nature go, but you're still part of a football team for the better part of, you know, 6 or 7 months. You know, with OTAs, preseason, with the season being as long as it is. No way you're going to tell me you were on that team. I don't care if you do play offense and did not know that was going on. I'm not buying it. So if you do, I mean, truthfully, Drew Brees doesn't have to come out and say anything about it. He could just say no comment and just keep going about his business. But to come out and say you don't know anything, I mean, just don't say anything. Just don't say anything. Come on, say you don't know nothing. It's just crazy. I just don't. Again, that's part of the denial. And, you know, hopefully they get Francis, you know, hopefully they can get this thing straightened out. They're going to get hit hard, though. I mean, they're going to get hit harder than the Patriots got hit. They could lose multiple picks in not only this year's draft, following year's draft. Payton could be suspended for anywhere. You know, Greg Williams could be suspended, you know, anywhere from 4 to 6 games. Payton could do a month. So they're going to, you know, throw the hammer at him without question in terms of this situation. Again, no excuse for this situation. They do it again. It's done all the time in the NFL. But I don't know if it's done or was done to this level in terms of the NFL. Here's React quote number two. This year there isn't a lot of need that needs changing. It's just tweaking. That is CBS Sports Chairman Sean McManus, who's talking about CBS and Turner moving Charles Barkley off the selection show, and Barkley's going to appear in this show. You know, called hardcore brackets. Barkley still is going to be a part of their coverage. You know, when when it starts in terms of the coverage, he's just not going to be on a selection show. Still going to be part of their basic, the basic coverage that they had in terms of watching, in terms of their games and the studio work. But listen, I don't care how many games Barkley watches in terms of prepping for this. You can't, like, you can barely get away with him being on, you know, talking college basketball. You can, but you cannot get away with him talking about who's in it and who should make it, who should be this seed, who's that seed. If Barkley, Charles Barkley gambles, plays golf, and does a little bit of TV work once a week. He's not following these games, and he does not know enough about this, about the seeding process and about these teams to know who should be seeded where. He's not Joe Lunardi. I mean, Joe Lunardi or a guy who just crunches these brackets, you know, year round. I mean, these guys, you know, the Mel Kuypers, the Todd McShays, who are making those draft boards, that's what they're doing. They do that for a living. And that's what they're doing, you know, 24/7, 7 days a week. I mean, they're doing it. I'm exaggerating with that, but that is their lives. So moving him off the selection show is definitely without question a smart move by McManus and CBS. Now, I mean, this is not his cup of tea here. So we'll see how it works out when he's on these other shows. There is a lack of concentration, overconfidence, and a certain level of selfishness in general. That is one Pau Gasol following the Lakers' loss to the Washington Wizards. And basically, in those two games, first of all, in the Wizards game, Andrew Bynum and Gasol were 12 for 19 from the field. Okay, let me put this in perspective. Kobe Bryant in that game missed 22 shots. So he missed more shots than they actually attempted combined. And, you know, you look at the two losses the Lakers had earlier this week to, you know, coming off the Miami win to a hapless Detroit team and the Wizards team that frankly is one of the worst in the league. He goes basically 15 for 56 in those games. Lakers lose both to mediocre teams. And again, at some point, Bryant is going to have to give up the reins or adjust his game to going through the post, whether it be Gasol or Andrew Bynum. Because those two as a combination down low are unstoppable. I mean, there's not a matchup in the league. Maybe the Bulls are the only team that can match up with them in terms of having defensive front players in the front court that can guard those guys. That might be it. Maybe there are certain players that give Gasol problems or that give Bynum problems individually. But as a duo, that team, that those guys are unstoppable. And now, you know, their chemistry together has been much better in terms of passing the ball with each other, they to each other, you know. But they, you know, the Lakers, I was, you know, watching the Minnesota game last night. The Lakers, there are times when the Lakers forget that Pau Gasol is on the team. And you just get totally ignored. And you see Kobe take jump shot after jump shot after jump shot after jump shot. And again, you look at what he's shooting. You know, he goes 8 for 25. He goes 9 for 31. 11 for 26. So until he makes that commitment, until Bryant changes his game or alters his game somewhat, then, you know, Lakers are going to be in a tough position. They're going to make the game a lot harder than it is. I mean, that offense is not hard. You run it through the two all-star seven footers that you have, and everything else will be easy offensively. But Bryant certainly does not see it that way. Mike Brown, you know, who empowers Kobe, says shot selection is not an issue, which is the biggest – I don't know what film Mike Brown's watching or games he's watching, but Kobe has taken some awful shots in the past two or three games. 347-215-6180, 15 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour. We'll be back with Are You Kidding Me? 17 minutes after the 11 o'clock hour on this latest edition of the Saturday Morning Wake Up Call, as I'll take you to 11:30 as we discuss the world of sports. 347-215-6180 is your call number. And here we go with another segment of...
Are you kidding me?
NCAA Chairman Jeff Hathaway comes out earlier this week and basically says, you know, Kentucky and Syracuse are going to be number one seeds. Now, listen, it's not brain surgery, and it would be the worst kept secret in the world that's going to be the case. We all know that Kentucky, who's only lost one game, and Syracuse, even with their loss last night, only lost two games, are going to be number one seeds. I don't think we need anybody to come out and say that. But if you are the chairman of the NCAA selection committee, I mean, are you supposed to come out this weekend? Are you supposed to be commenting on teams that are in and out of the tournament? You know, if you want to talk about what the new things that you're going to be looking at this year as compared to last year, you know, you would say you'll be focusing on, say, the last 13 games, 12 games, the last 10 games. Or you want to talk about different things that you're going to, you're going to put more emphasis on road wins or road conference wins, things of that nature. That's one thing. But, yeah, I mean, you can't come out and say that. Who's going to be the number one seed? Or basically say who's going to be the number one seed. I mean, that's what he said. You know, just give them the basic comment, you'll see on Sunday. I mean, he comes out there and says, I think we all agree that the season ended today. We know who the two best teams are. You know, I just don't get it. I just don't get, you know, to me, that kind of, like, you know, you can kind of question the integrity of the process when he'll come out and saying that. And again, we all know that Syracuse and Kentucky are, without question, number one seeds. That's not even the issue. But you are the chairman of the NCAA tournament committee. For you to come out and say that is just kind of like why? I didn't understand that. That would be one of the questions I would be asking him after this whole process is over. Why did you come out early and say that, you know, make the statements that you made about Syracuse and Kentucky? Is your call number. 21 minutes after 11 o'clock hour. We'll finish where we started with a new era in the nation's capital. We'll be right back.
Well, we're moving on. Finally got it.
Are the Washington Redskins moving on up? Well, they took a big step last night with the acquisition of the number 2 pick from the St. Louis Rams. RG3 is coming to town. The Washington Redskins, of course, get the number 2 pick. They trade away 3 number 1 picks and a number 2 pick for the rights of the Rams. Number 2 pick, great move for the Rams. You look at the Ram perspective of this whole thing. The Rams are going to have 6 number 1 picks in the next 3 years. You have 2 this year, 2 in 2013, 2 in 2014. Okay. And then you're going to have, along with their number 2 picks that they have an additional number 2 picks. So they're going to have 10, between first and second round picks, they're going to have 10 first and second round picks in the next 3 years. That's how you build a franchise. And give the Rams credit. I think they got certainly more than fair, than equal compensation for a guy who we've never seen play before. I've already given you the Redskins perspective on why this was a great move and why this move had to be made. The flip side is, from the Ram perspective, hey, you know, you're saying, well, why would you trade a guy who you think could be a great player? Ram, we don't know this guy's going to be a great player. I mean, there have been a lot of first-round top 5 picks be bust at the quarterback position. It's kind of a crapshoot. You think, you know, I have confidence that Luck's going to be a great player in franchise, at worst a franchise-caliber quarterback. I think RG3 is going to be a Pro Bowl caliber player, but again, NFL, with these quarterbacks, you never know. It's absolutely an inexact science. General managers, scouts get it wrong all the time with these quarterbacks. All the time. So I have to give the Rams, you have to give the Rams a lot of credit. They're going to be able to address a lot of needs with all these draft picks that they do have in the next couple of years. I think they're going to be competing, you know, right. I think they're going to be right there anyway in terms of competing for the division with the San Francisco 49ers. Expect, you know, Bradford to have a bounce back gear, pick up a couple free agents. And of course, they will be loaded with draft picks. I mean, they'll be in a position to where they can even, you know, there'll be years where they can even trade down and accumulate more picks. So this deal is a great deal. I feel for both teams. I thought the Redskins did what they had to do, and I thought that the Rams obviously made out like bandits with this particular deal. Team I didn't understand was the Cleveland Browns, who this year have 2 first round picks, and the Browns not making more of a push for that number 1 pick. For the Rams number 2 pick. I just didn't get it. I don't get, like, the Rams, Cleveland needs a quarterback as bad as the Redskins need a quarterback. Cleveland, you know, you got Colt McCoy and who else? Cleveland has just been awful for a long time as far as not having a quarterback. I mean, they've been like the Redskins over the past, you know, couple of decades. I mean, they haven't had a decent quarterback since Bernie Kosar. So you have a chance to get RG3. You have more, to me, you have more to give. You have more to give away than the Redskins with the extra first round pick. Why didn't Cleveland make a bigger push to get RG3? That, to me, is a major question, a question that needs to be answered very soon by Mike Holmgren, who's calling shots down in Cleveland. Again, Mike Shanahan finally, you know, has his quarterback. You know, now Shanahan, recent memory, has had, you know, has handled quarterbacks poorly. But let's be honest, you know, Don McNabb was basically finished when he got him. The problem was the move to get Don McNabb and giving up a second round pick to get him. Beckman, Grossman cannot play. Shanahan did a good job with Jake Plummer, got to a conference championship. Cutler will never know in terms of what could have happened between him and Shanahan as far as, you know, what it would have looked like, because they both got, you know, traded and fired before everything materialized. But he did draft Jay Cutler, so he deserves credit for that. And of course, he won 2 Super Bowls with John Elway, and you know, I don't give him that. You give him some credit, but let's be honest with you. That was more about John Elway than it was about Mike Shanahan. I mean, Elway had been to 3 Super Bowls before Shanahan was his head coach. So, you know, now, you know, Shanahan really is going to be on the hot seat. I think if the Redskins don't get Peyton Manning, that RG3 has to start right away, and you know, you go from there. The Redskins are going to be in free agency, are going to be major players in free agency in general, in terms of adding weapons, getting some receivers, getting some receivers, adding to the offensive line. So we'll see what happens with that. But it was, again, a move that the Redskins, to me, had to make. You know, this is a quarterback league. You look at your division, all your division has franchise caliber quarterbacks in it. You know, you have a top 5 quarterback in Eli Manning. You have a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback in Tony Romo, and when healthy, a Pro Bowl caliber quarterback in Michael Vick. So the Redskins, to me, are better off now than what they were, say 24 hours ago. And to me, it was a move that absolutely had to be made from a Redskins perspective. Thanks for tuning into the program. Hope you enjoyed the show. Remember, we will be back Monday or Tuesday with the NCAA tournament program, and we will also have some coverage of the NBA trade deadline. Could do a show next weekend, maybe even next Thursday. I'm talking about if there is a major trade. Now, I'm not talking about Chris Kamen getting traded, but if there is a major trade, mainly Dwight Howard, we'll be on and do something with that. So long, have a great weekend, and I will see you soon on the next edition of the Saturday Morning Wake-Up Call.